You are listening to a Commonwealth Bank of Australia Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. This podcast provides general market-related information and is not intended to be an investment research report. The information contained in this podcast is based on previously published material, and before listening, you're advised to read the full Global Economic and Markets Research disclaimers, which can be found at combankresearch.com.au.
Welcome to the CommBank Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. My name is Belinda Allen and I'm a Senior Economist here at CommBank. And today I'm joined by Elias Haddad, our Senior Strategist based in London. And Elias, it's so good to have you on today.
Oh, thank you very much, Belinda, for having me on this podcast.
It's your debut and we're actually going to drill down into what is happening in your part of the world over in the UK and the Eurozone. And in particular, I guess the coronavirus pandemic has really started to revive some long-standing warnings about the impending demise of the Eurozone. Now, you've been doing a lot of work and looking at, I guess, if the European idea is risk of collapse, or will this force the Eurozone to come out of this crisis with deeper ties? What's your latest thinking on that?
Yeah, that's a bit the market narrative right now. There's a lot of a bit of a debate around how the Eurozone will come out of this crisis. And I think if history is any guide, the Euro will come out of this crisis probably with deeper economic and monetary union ties, not less. In fact, if you look in the past 12 years, the Eurozone has faced a handful of existential crises. We had, remember, the global financial crisis, the European debt crisis, we had the Brexit crisis, we had the migrant crisis. And following each crisis, support for the Euro actually remained quite resilient. In fact, you look at support for the Euro in Greece, it was roughly just around 60% around 2011. But since then, it has recovered to about 70%. Similarly, if you look at support for the euro in Italy, it has recovered from a low of about 50% in 2016 to now almost 65%. So that's quite encouraging. But more importantly is that actually in the past 10 years, the eurozone has made some important progress towards an economic, financial, and fiscal union. We had new rules that have been introduced, for instance, to improve the coordination of economic and fiscal policies, like, for instance, beefing up the Stability and Growth Pact. Now, this pact is a pact that monitors and coordinates national fiscal and economic policies. We also had a number of initiatives that have been taken to ensure that EU member state banks are stronger and better supervised. For example, every individual deposit now in the EU member state country are fully protected up to about 100,000 euros. Temporary and permanent backstops have been put in place as well for EU member state countries no longer able to tap the market. If you remember back in 2010, we had the European Financial Stability Facility that was set up. That was a temporary backstop that was followed by the more permanent backstop called the European Stability Mechanism back in 2012, or the ESM. And then more recently, actually, since the onset of the pandemic back in March, we had small steps have also been taken towards a deeper union. Most notably, I think about, for instance, the easier access to this European Stability Mechanism special credit line to EU countries in need. So EU countries that really need financing and have difficulty, for instance, to tap the market, well, they can tap this special credit line without the harsh conditionality that used to be associated with tapping this credit line. Also, I think that you look at the European Commission, they're allowing EU countries now to deviate from budgetary objective and allowing that permitting state aid support to compensate companies for the damage directly caused by the coronavirus. So it's quite significant. It's quite important, but clearly more has to be done, at least with respect to fiscal solidarity.
So just on that, obviously we've seen, I guess, the leadership within Germany and France through Merkel and Macron really start to lead this greater fiscal solidarity. How important is the idea of that Franco-German recovery fund towards leading to that greater fiscal solidarity?
It's quite a material proposal. In fact, just looking at the size, it's quite important. So the European Commission actually released a proposal which is essentially based on that Franco-German initiative, and this Eurozone-wide recovery fund amounts to about 750 billion euros. So that's quite large. We're talking in excess of 6% of EU GDP. But what's important is how this recovery fund is divided into. So 500 billion of the 750 is grants, and the rest, 250, is based on loans. Now, the important thing with grants is that they don't need to be reimbursed, and there's virtually no strings attached to this fund. So it goes a long way into ensuring greater fiscal solidarity within EU member state countries. Now, to get the deal through, a unanimous vote from the 27 EU member states is required. And that's where there's still not a bit of uncertainty, because you don't have a unanimous, at this stage, a unanimous approval for this recovery fund. Namely, we've got four countries. They're aptly named the Frugal Four. Mm-hmm. So the Netherlands, Austria, Sweden, Denmark. They're against a Eurozone-wide recovery fund that is largely financed by grants instead of loans. They prefer it to be financed mostly by loans instead of grants. So there's still a bit of convincing to do from France and Germany to ensure that these frugal four countries jump on board. Now, there was a meeting in mid-June that failed. They failed to convince these four countries to soften their stance against this recovery fund financed by grants instead of loans. Now there's a new summit another summit that is expected to take place around mid-July, I believe the 17th, 18th of July, where hopefully by then we'll have some more positive, we'll have more positive news as to whether these four countries will jump on board and I guess give this recovery fund the green light, because it could be quite important in terms of pushing the Eurozone and the EU towards a greater fiscal solidarity.
And it obviously will be quite important for the economic outlook as well. So just changing I guess countries now, we're going to talk about the UK, where another big cloud of uncertainty continues to hang over a country, and that's really the result of post-Brexit trade negotiations between the UK and the Eurozone. Where are we at in relation to an update on those trade negotiations?
Yeah, well, I think that to start off, the key starting point here is that it's important to remember now that the UK has formally rejected the option to extend post-Brexit transition beyond the end of this year. So this means the UK will leave the EU on the 31st of December 2020 with either a new economic partnership or simply no deal. Now, new rounds of trade negotiation already started this week, the week of the 29th of June, and they'll be held each week throughout July. Now, the EU, I think they want to sign off on an accord by a summit in October. UK Prime Minister Johnson said that he doesn't expect the talks to last beyond August. Regardless, at this stage, the key is that very little progress has been made with recent rounds of trade talks. The key disagreements remain on regulatory alignment and access by UK financial firms to the EU. And what I mean by regulatory alignment is, for instance, it's for the UK to continue to follow at least some of the rules of the EU single market, simply to prevent potential unfair competition, let's say in the areas of state aid, employment standard, or relevant tax matter. But the UK insists on regulatory flexibility.
And I guess in all that, we have to remember that the UK is much more exposed to the Eurozone economy than the Eurozone to the UK economy. So I guess in relation to who is most exposed to getting a trade deal done, it is the UK, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, the EU exports actually more on the goods front. The EU has a merchandise trade surplus with the EU. So also, it's in the interest of the EU actually to move towards a free trade agreement on goods, because you look at the EU exports to the UK and they account for over 2% of the Eurozone economy.
What should we expect with the outcome of the post-Brexit trade negotiations? Like, by the sound of it, are we even going to get there?
Yeah, well, I mean, we see basically two scenarios. So either, you know, we get to some form of basic goods only free trade agreement because it's in the interest of the EU, but it's also in the interest of the UK, right? I think the UK Conservative Party did want to consolidate some of the recent electoral gains in the industrial towns of the UK's north and midland. So it's certainly in the interest of both parties to have a simple goods-only trade deal. The other scenario is just a no-deal agreement. Now, in this scenario, trade between the UK and the EU would revert to World Trade Organization arrangement as of the 1st of January next year. This would result in the introduction of tariffs, quotas, custom, and I guess other non-tariff barriers to trade. Also, the UK would lose preferential trading arrangements with third countries, resulting from after EU membership would cease. So, these are basically the two scenarios, and I think this is the bottom line here. You know, regardless whether you have a goods-only free trade agreement or a no-deal scenario, both of these potential scenarios are projected to have a material negative impact on the UK economy. So this implies that potentially the Bank of England, or the government for that matter, will probably, in the UK, will have to do more easing, whether it's the Bank of England through more rate cuts or potentially an expansion of their asset purchase facility. It's going to be quite interesting the next few months, at least for in the Eurozone and in the UK.
And certainly I think we'll be doing another podcast on the Brexit negotiations later in the year, by the sound of it. Really appreciate your insights today, Elias.
Thank you, Belinda.
Now, you can find all of Elias's research on the growing need for Eurozone fiscal solidarity and also all the latest on the Brexit negotiations on combankresearch.com.au.